Support for today's show is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
So is Duffy on hold?
We already know where he called.
Oh, you're going to play 145 games a third?
Really?
All right. Awesome.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
All right. Fantasy Focus Baseball for Monday, March 19, 2017. I'm Eric. He's Tristan. And we've got producer Anthony Colladio here, plus researcher extraordinaire Kyle Soppy and editorial watchdog Leo Howe, who's very disappointed about the Anthony Banda demotion. Leo, let's discuss the Anthony Banda demotion for about 20 minutes today. Then we'll do the hash browns. I think that makes for a very full show. What do you think?
Let's talk all about four-man rotations. Let's talk all about bullpens. Yeah, let's raise all day. Raise focus.
News and notes from the weekend. Tristan has a winning team from Tout Wars, and of course the hash browns a little bit later. Here's the buzz. You know, actually, Leo brings up a good point, which I hadn't thought about, Tristan, so I'll ask you this. How did the four-man rotation stuff affect your drafts or auctions at all? Has it not? I mean, what Tampa Bay is doing, I mean, we say it in jest, nobody was taking Anthony Banda in a 10 or 12 team league, but this could be the future, a four team. And then we got the six team one with the Angels and their ace potentially pitching terribly. We'll get to Ohtani in a minute as well. Anything change for you and how you would draft rotations based on what teams are doing?
I'd shift the projections on the aces, so Chris Archer. The Twins are also attempting to do this, from my understanding, so that could bump up the innings for guys like Oda Rizzi, Cal Gibson maybe. I know I'm forgetting a guy there, but Irvin Santana's on the DL. I actually think that the theme to me is creativity among teams, because we've also got teams like the Angels you mentioned, Eric, who are going with a six-man rotation. So, you've got innings opportunities on those who are using the shortened staffs. You're going to get fewer innings from those who are using the six-man staffs, and it's a constant reminder that pitchers don't give you the volume they used to. They're not going to get to 200 innings and the volume as they did even 2 years ago, and you've got to prepare accordingly. It's why I throw out there the multi-inning dynamo relievers like Chris Devensky and maybe Alex Reyes. They've got additional value, I think, this year.
But do you really know in advance who the multi-inning relievers are? I mean, Devensky's obvious because he's done it for the past two seasons. And who was the guy that did it for the Angels last season, who, you know, has a long career through 100 innings, but I mean,
for the Angels?
Yeah, wasn't he on the Angels or the A's somewhere in the American League West? You know what I'm talking about.
Yusmeiro Petit.
Yeah, Petit. So, like, in a general sense, like, but there's going to be so many surprises that come out of nowhere. So I almost feel like it's not even worth drafting a multi-inning middle reliever, because you can just pick them up in April when you see who's doing what. That's kind of how it works, right?
But that's a definite fair approach, because, I mean, we didn't think that Devensky would be as good as he was last year. I think he was drafted in the deeper leagues going into that. The reason I threw Reyes' name in here is just that I think teams are looking at last year's postseason model, and in Reyes' case, the Cardinals don't really have a rotation opening. They probably don't want to tax his arm too much, and now there's the report that he could be one of those 100 innings kind of dual role types as they try to build up a workload for 2019. I think at that point they want to get him up to 160, 175 innings, so they might want to get 100, 120 out of him this year.
All right, so the season starts in 10 days. Big deal. And, I mean, it is a big deal. I'm not trying to say it in jest. And now we're looking at stats a little bit closer. We're looking at performance, and performance might be affecting how managers do things. Shohei Ohtani, I feel like this is still a story because he's really struggling. And there's actually talk that he might not even start the year in the major league. I think he will, but if you were starting a draft today, like, are you going to like affect his ranking, or are you still confident in the same Ohtani we thought about a month ago?
I am concerned because he is getting hit around to an extreme extent, and he's had a couple of games where he has looked kind of ugly as a hitter too, which is even more troubling. If he needs some polish on both sides, that's a major issue, especially considering that the Angels have no reason to rush the service time with him. Let's not forget that this is a guy who falls into that same bin here. As a matter of fact, he's on the 40-man, but yeah, you'd start the service time clock. It wouldn't shock me to see them see them demote him, and I think that as a top hunter pick, I don't think that that's in the cards anymore. I'm probably bumping him down to 30th at his position.
I mean, every time I've seen him bat this spring, he's done nothing. He's 2-for-20 at the plate, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks, no extra, nary an extra base hit there. And on the mound, what's been alarming is batters aren't having any trouble hitting him, like, and hitting him hard, barreling him up. Now, this could be like maybe he doesn't care, like Zach Greinke doesn't care about spring training, but I feel like I don't want to overreact to this because this is the first time he's been in this, you know, pitched in this country. He should be great. But, man, if I'm going to move him in one direction in the rankings, it's not going to be in the good direction.
It's down.
Yeah.
It's got it. I mean, the two things that I think look good for him so far is his stuff does miss bats at times. But it also, as you said, Eric, gets barreled up. On the hitting side, I think that his plate discipline is a little bit sharper than I expected. But you can't just take those two things and hang your hat on them. I'm with you. I think he's going down in the ranks, if anything. If he gets demoted, where do you think you draft him in a standard league if he gets demoted?
Yeah, I think I would late.
He probably drops outside the top 200.
But I would draft anybody late. Like, I'm willing to wait on, you know, guys like Acuna and Kingery, too.
True.
I don't have Ohtani in any leagues, so it doesn't matter that much to me. I mean, I want to see it. I think it's fun. I can't wait to watch him pitch in a game that matters and see how he can really do. Top 200? Yeah, I can see him leaving the top 200 for me quickly. Quickly.
Where we got ADP for him right now? He's still in the 70s. I remember it was crazy high.
He was by far the number one guy on my do not draft list.
He is 83rd in ADP as of today's report.
Yeah, that's just crazy. It's just crazy.
Way too early.
All right, let's move on. The Twins lost a shortstop. Jorge Polanco was interesting, though. Now, I don't know what his ADP is. It couldn't have been too generous. But he kind of mattered in the second half last year, and I thought he was going to probably matter. He might have had a third. He might have been the number 3 hitter for the Twins, right? Is he even in the top 200? I don't think he is now.
He was just outside my top 200. Well, he was higher than the ADP. The ADP is currently 294, but remember, that's because he's probably going undrafted in some leagues. He's only been picked in 19% of ESPN leagues, 232.9 in the ones that he was selected.
Does this matter? Does anyone care that Jorge Polanco is going to miss the first 80 games of the season? Now, last year's numbers...
outside of the standard.
I mean, in a deeper league, he hit 10 home runs and batted .293 with 7 steals in the second half last year. I can't imagine a lot of shortstops did that. And that's a pace for 20-15 with a good batting average.
Yeah, he's a decent player here for the deeper leagues. The minute you get anything outside the 10-team mixed leagues, I think Jorge Polanco absolutely matters. There's some profit potential in where he is going, as Kyle points out, the 25th shortstop off the board. That means if you're in a 12-team mix, he absolutely has got to come into the late-round conversation. Now, it's a shame. The question becomes, do they push Nick Gordon a little bit faster?
I can't imagine that this would affect that. Do you think, really?
I don't think so. That's not the direction I think they're going to go. I think they'll probably use a lot more Eduardo Escobar at shortstop. But, I mean, I think that if this becomes a problem area and he starts hot in the minors, maybe.
And replacing him is Eduardo Escobar, who really doesn't have a lot of fantasy value here. But let me ask you from a larger point. I mean, I think this is the first. Is this the first major leaguer in the last week or two with an 80-gamer? We've seen a couple minor leaguers here. This might be. Is this becoming an issue again? Like, it wouldn't change how you draft or anything, but like, if we see a couple more of these 80 gamers, does it make us think in a fantasy sense, or do you not care?
I don't. Well, I mean, it makes you think. It's just I don't think there's anything you can do about it. How could we have predicted that this was going to happen to him?
You can't know who's going to be that guy. I mean, you can't.
Right, but like, I'm worried a little bit about it. Yeah.
Right.
Especially considering he just said that he wasn't even aware he took it. We got that whole thing going on again. So are we going to get a rash of those? I don't know.
You know, I don't know this case to know whether to believe him. I don't know the person. But there seems to be a lot of that going on where, like, there was a minor leaguer last week who said, I don't even know. I seriously don't know how this happened. And I almost felt like maybe I believe him. Like, maybe this does happen where guys are getting pinched and, like, they really aren't doing anything. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Moving. Yeah. Speaking of not doing anything, the Mets, Jason Vargas' non-pitching hand is fractured. It's a Hammett bone, which is a big deal for hitters, but not really such a big deal on your non-pitching hand, I don't think. Jason Vargas, you know, I can't imagine he matters that much in standard leagues either. But let's talk Mets here for a minute. Noah Syndergaard, that was a good outing yesterday, if you look at the line. Went deep into the game. He's striking people out. No sign of injury. Are you buying on Noah Syndergaard again? And what about the rest of the rotation? Harvey, Matz, Zach Wheeler would replace Vargas. I mean, you look at the names and you say, wow, that's a rotation. But it wasn't a great rotation last year when only one of those guys was healthy.
Yeah, the injuries were the major question here. I actually haven't adjusted Noah Syndergaard's ranking at all, but I also had him pretty well ranked. This continues to cement his status as one of the highest upside and riskiest pitchers of the guys, I'd say, in the top 15 or so. He's going to give you potential Cy Young stats in the games that he's healthy for, but are there going to be more than 25 of them on the starting side? I don't know the answer to that. As you said, Eric, you mentioned this before, and I'm with you on this, that he dials the fastball up to 100 miles per hour. Did it in his first game with his very first pitch of spring training. Is this smart if he's going to throw that high volume of that particular pitch? It could put a strain on his arm, especially considering last year he missed so much time. I like the guy. I think that there's a case to be made that he's the next guy off the board after the big four go, and I'm seeing that starting to be the trend in leagues, but I don't know. I feel like he's getting a little too rich for my taste. The rest of the Mets rotation? I'm not a big Matt Harvey believer, despite my $2 Tout Wars bid. I'll say that. I still don't know why I did that. It was a mistake of mine, probably. I had it pointed out to me that he's had a couple of good outings here, getting some strikeouts. And then I asked, well, who was he facing? You probably couldn't name any of those hitters. Zach Wheeler, I think, is the one who is interesting in the deeper NL-only leagues. If Wheeler gets into that rotation, I've seen a couple of good things from him this spring.
Why is that necessarily a mistake? $2 from Matt Harvey. We'll get to your Tout team in a sec. I mean, you didn't pay much. There's obviously upside that we've seen in the past. Why are you down on this? I mean, I would never go near Matt Harvey. I mean, the minute his name would come up in an auction, I would ignore it. But I don't want to say that he can't do something this year. Why can't he be a top 40 starting pitcher for when he's active?
For exactly the reason you just said. You wouldn't do it. Neither would anybody else in the room except for me. I'm the guy who threw two when he was thrown out there at one, and I could have taken a $1 pitcher there who had comparable upside and perhaps fewer questions than him. It's just a matter of money management on the back end. The other problem is it's a 9-man staff that we have in this league. You can add a 10th guy based on the swingman position. We can throw either a hitter or a pitcher there, and I blocked a spot I could have used on a higher upside guy, and I could have used that extra dollar perhaps to get a better pitcher.
Who's leading the league in hitting in spring training? It looks like Jose Perella of the Padres, batting .436, two home runs. Ronald Acuna, who's already been demoted, right? Or is he going to be? .432. I think he homered against the Phillies.
I don't think officially.
Yeah,
I don't think he was officially.
Dan Vogelbach of Seattle is number three at .415. So those are the only three guys batting over .400. And they're all really interesting because, like Vogelbach, I mean, I don't know who Seattle's first baseman is. None of us really think Ryan Healy's all that great. There's opportunity there for Vogelbach and the Rule 5 guy, Mike Ford. Acuna, we know, is going to be great. Not only does he have four home runs, he has four stolen bases. I got to tell you, I know he's getting sent to the minors for 3 weeks. He's in my top 150 easily. He's going to keep moving up. He's going to be great. He is.
Nobody is downgrading the price. They're following the same strategy you're discussing, and I also endorse that. I think that you're right. He's coming up the first day that they get the service time question answered.
Which is like the second week of April, right?
It's 21. I believe it's 21 days. I'll have to look exactly. But, yeah, we're talking about sometime mid to late April. Ugh. This is like Evan Longoria. Look at the Evan Longoria and the Chris Bryant rookie years. It's like that.
Perella, you know, San Diego's left field situation, I mean, we kind of assume to be Hunter Renfro, but I don't want to assume that the way Perella's hitting. I mean, he could win the job.
Other is Perella has a path to playing time at second base and third base.
Well, they're going to play Headley, aren't they?
They are, but Perella, because he can play those three different positions, I think gives him some options. The other thing, too, they could throw him in at shortstop occasionally. I think that there's a nice utility role in the Ben Zobrist mold. I like him. I think he's an undervalued guy. I would have loved to have gotten him on Saturday.
I mean, fourth in batting is Carlos Osuahe, who's their second baseman, who could bat second for the Padres. Nobody's taking him in any drafts.
I've seen him go in the deeper ones.
Lewis Brinson, a lot of strikeouts in spring training, but a lot of other stuff, too. DeShields, who I love this year. He's got four stolen bases. I mean, I do look at the guys who are stealing bases in spring training because that's a thing that they want to do, whether they're trying to show off or not. But, I mean, DeShields could steal 30 bases this season. That's interesting. How about Taylor Motter with six steals and seven attempts? Anyway, I'm just wasting time.
Colton Long with six and eight attempts, too.
He's interesting, right? Isn't he interesting? I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do here, because didn't Jose Martinez have a monster game over the weekend? And Matt Carpenter's healthy, but he can play first, second, or third. Jerko doesn't have to play every day. Wong doesn't have to. They've got a lot of options in that Cardinals infield.
Yep. Colton Wong, I think that there is some real interesting potential for stolen bases alone. I don't know about the other categories here, but the key for him was they brought in Willie McGee as the base running coach this year. And I know that Colton Wong has been focusing specifically on that part of his game. Good to see these stats.
Top ERAs in spring training. Marco Gonzalez of Seattle is number one. That's five starts, 16 and a third innings, and only two earned runs. We've talked about Marco Gonzalez on this show in the past when he was on the Cardinals. Always injuries.
Oh, we're going back there. We're opening old wounds.
Well, I mean, do you believe? I mean, if you're pitching well in March, I mean, maybe you can pitch well in April. Obviously, you're going to face different hitters in a different environment in April, but the guy always had stuff. You know, the reason why we're talking about it is because he's pitching well. Do you think he could pitch well? Could he be a top 75 starter? I think he could be.
If he can stay healthy enough, absolutely the numbers could propel him up into that. I have actually watched two full outings of his, and he does look pretty darn strong, a lot better, a lot healthier than last season. I don't want to take those numbers specifically overboard, but he's always had the stuff, as you said, and I'm going to forgive him the injury question from last season. Definitely a guy to throw a dart at if you're in a deeper league.
Yeah, I mean, some of the other guys here on this top ERA list, I mean, Dan Straley, I'm not going near. I mean, it doesn't matter what he's doing in the spring. Syndergaard, that's a nice spring. Antonio Sensatella, I know Rockies, but Sean Newcomb of Atlanta, you know, 15 and a third innings, nine hits. I don't know who he's faced. It is five walks, but we know he's got upside. He's the portly lefty, right? Who, and Atlanta could win half their game. So I don't want to assume that teams, like, we look at Miami and Detroit and we say, oh, that's going to be bad. But I don't see that necessarily with Atlanta and Philadelphia or Seattle. Like, these are teams that could win half their game. Cincinnati, I think, is going to be a little bit of a surprise. Tyler Mail, he's having a nice spring training.
Yeah. That certainly is.
Looks good there. So, I mean, there could be some new names here. How about Alcantara, Sandy Alcantara of Miami, who came over in the Cardinals trade, who we thought was going to close at some point, but he's still in the rotation now. I can't imagine he's making the team. Probably going to the minors,
I think, right? He is. They are talking very much. By the way, Newcomb, too, they are very much talking like it's the highest probability that both of those guys will break camp in the rotations. To go back to your point on Newcomb, 15-5 walk rate. That is an improvement for a guy who has very good stuff. That's something people are ignoring. He does have the walk problem from the minors, but that 15-5 is a promising sign. And Alcantara is certainly an NL-only late-round pick. I think that there's a lot of upside. Eric, you've mentioned him a lot, too. Definitely one to keep in mind.
I do look at strikeout rates a little bit when it comes to spring training numbers. I don't care about the ERA, the home runs. I want to see walks and strikeouts, see who's keeping runners off base and how they're doing it. So, like Paul Blackburn of Oakland, I mean, nobody's going to invest there in a 10-teamer, but it's a strikeout per inning. Like, did something change with him? Because in last year, there were no strikeouts. Chris Stratton is a guy I got in labor. For $2, I outbid Steve Gardner there, and that's 18 strikeouts in 16 and a third innings. That interests me because that's a team that is in a pitcher's park. I think the team's going to win half its games. I think Stratton could be interesting in a deep league. Jordan Montgomery, a lot of strikeouts there too.
Incidentally, with some of these guys, one thing I like to do is I like to go on the baseball reference page and check the quality of opponent. That's one neat little thing that I found there.
Do they grade
the quality. They do it for spring. I'm looking at Chris Stratton's page right now. Had a 7.5 opponent's quality that grades double A level to triple A. That's averaging between the two. So it means that, take it with a grain of salt. It means that, and Eric, I don't think you're on board with this one. Chris Stratton's not going to K 10.5 per nine innings.
No, I'm hoping for eight.
But this is the thing. He needs to dominate that level of competition, so this definitely does qualify as a plus.
All right, other names here to note. Mike Moustakas homered on Saturday off of Colon. If you homer up Bartolo Colon, is it like homering off a double-A guy? Throwing his fastball at 85. Colon might not make – I don't know how you can draft Bartolo Colon in any league, even a deeper league. But we know Moustakas is good. Conforto. Michael Conforto played in a minor league game yesterday. 17th-round pick. That's not good enough if he's going to play in mid-April. He should be near the top 100.
Where are you valuing him? I'm very pro Michael Conforto. I'm getting more so lately.
I need to move him up.
Are you at the point of a top 100 ranking yet?
I think he's getting, you know, if he's only going to miss a couple weeks of April, then yeah, I'm there. I thought he was going to miss more time than that. I was concerned he was going to miss like 2 months.
He's going to leap up to about 120 for me right now, and I'm hoping to get him to 100 if he's – the fact he's playing games right now means he's well ahead, and everything has been very positive.
And I moved up Daniel Murphy because if he's fine, by April 1st, and he needs to be a top, like, 75 guy.
I don't think he's going to be ready, 50. Though, do you?
I think he might be, last I heard. I mean, look, we're just talking, you know, what the beat reporters are saying. You know, I'm not
watching.
Beat reporter
just said beat reporter said this morning he believes there's no chance he makes the roster. That was Mark Zuckerman.
But he could miss only 2 weeks. Your labor draft was interesting to me. Two closers, Kenley Jansen for $26, which is a lot. But then you got Corey Knebel as well. Normally, if you get Jansen, you wouldn't get a second guy like that. You're starting pitching awfully cheap and a lot of risk. Harvey, Flaherty. Didn't Flaherty just get demoted? Jameson Taillon, yep. Musgrove, who's been hurt. Cobb, who doesn't have a job. There's a lot of risk there with your starting pitcher. It's a good offense, and especially a good offense when on-base percentage counts, which it does in Tout Wars. So I like your offense there, although you have three Mets and, you know, Adrian Gonzalez, really?
And then I handcuffed him in the draft with Dominic Smith. Well, I mean, considering what was left there and the funds that I had, what else am I going to spend it on? I knew I couldn't get Ryan McMahon, and then he's probably getting demoted anyway.
It seems like a lot of risk for a team of yours.
It is, and it played out just like Labor did. You and I had talked about that before. It played out very strangely. The closer thing, I think, is immediately going to catch everybody's eyes. I had Kenley Jansen graded as a $30 player. Last year, he earned $35 using this format in NL-only 5x5 with this. It's standard pitching categories. So my feeling was I was willing to pay up to the 26 that I did. Now, I guess the mistake is that nobody wanted to pay for saves at all in this draft. Corey Knebel gets thrown out there, and I'm telling you, the bidding started softening up at about $10. And eventually he got to 15, and I just said, that's way too cheap, 16, and I ended up buying him. That was the second highest closer price. He tied with Felipe Rivero at $16. That was it. They were the only ones who sold for that much or more.
It's only a mistake if you don't win the league. I mean, who cares what you spend at this point? The auction's over.
It's too that to me, that is too much overcorrection for saves. This is taking the don't pay for saves strategy way too far to the extreme.
You can always trade one of the guys. I mean, you're not going to trade Jansen, but you could always trade. Knebel's a very good trade chip. So there's no like salary cap. You can, you know, trade him for a dollar player or a $30 player. It doesn't matter there. Conforto, Cespedes, and Adrian Gonzalez. That jumped out to me. Now, I understand, look, Adrian Gonzalez at a cheap price. You got to take a chance. He's going to play. They don't like Dominic Smith. It's pretty obvious. But Conforto, Cespedes, you know, you don't know how many games they're going to play. That's the problem. I mean, over under on games for either of them, is it 120? You take the over on either? I'm scared of Cespedes.
Yeah, and those are fair numbers. I'm more optimistic that Conforto does it than Cespedes, which I think is unusual. I think most are going to say that they think Cespedes is the one who goes over. I think Conforto goes over those two. I'm hanging a lot on Tommy Pham here, repeating, and that Tommy Pham was talked about also, like Colton Wong, improving his running game, that maybe he can give me some stolen bases. But the idea on this one was, when I didn't like the starting pitching prices and I sunk so much into Kenley Jansen, was that this is one league where starting pitching is the easiest to get on the trade market. Of any one specific spot, it's easy to trade a hitter for a pitcher, so I think I can address it that way. Maybe I'll trade one of those two Mets.
Fair enough. We'll get to your questions in a bit, but first, support for Fantasy Focused Baseball also comes from our friends at MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? Who doesn't? Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit. Every month they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. MeUndies uses Lensing Micromodal in their underwear. It's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. The results have been downright dreamy. Their adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. MeUndies has an exclusive offer for our listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping. They're so sure you'll love their underwear, they offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, and you will, you get a full refund. This is a no-brainer, people. Get a 20% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB.
It's time to unveil the new Hash Brown music, boys. You ready?
Yes!
Here we go.
Ooh, that's different.
A little more relaxed.
I like it. It's kind of jazzy.
It's like a soul jazz funk almost.
Good for you. I like you, Anthony. You can stay. I like it a lot. Cool. It's going to stay. Kyle, what do you got for questions? This is cool stuff. Well, I don't hear Kyle. Kyle, so let's make up Kyle questions ourself.
Kyle's just overwhelmed by the music. He's just taking it in.
You know, I am. Somebody just took the guy I was going to take in this million.
Can you hear me now?
Now I hear you.
All right.
You were there, right? You didn't leave, did you?
Oh, no. I've been
like,
here.
I know Leo leaves and goes gets breakfast and lunch and stuff.
Yeah. Stop
like...
chair dancing, Kyle.
You don't sound sold on this, Tristan. This definitely sounds like more of an Eric tune than Tristan.
Well, I don't want to make it sound like we changed just because of me. That's not why we changed.
No. Oh, no. I'm saying you're more pro this music.
Change though. Is good.
I mean, it was just
I'm
wrong.
I'm warm to it.
It was just wrong.
I mean, everybody can tell it was wrong. This now, this is good.
This
is
feels a, right?
This feels absolutely right. This Who sings this? Do we know?
This is like the MeUndies version of theme music.
MeUndies are pretty good, Kyle.
See, there you go. That's what I'm told.
They are great.
It just feels right, right? Is that what I'm
it
hearing?
It just feels right. That's all that matters.
That's what I like to hear. Well, we've got some Twitter questions here for you guys, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Matthew, he's kind of following a similar train of thought here with Mike Trout kind of raising the tides for everybody. If Zach Cozart and his 933 OPS from last season are batting toward the top of the Angels lineup, why is he being disrespected in drafts right now? He's going to shortstop 18, 207th overall player.
Do we know what the Angels are doing with their lineup? Because I think there's a lot of risk that Cozart bats 7th or 8th. Last I was looking at their lineup, I mean, they Ian Kinsler was leading off, Trout 2nd, Upton, we know Pujols has to bat cleanup because it's an old school manager who doesn't know any better. Cole Calhoun is there somehow.
The last starters lineup that they had in here went Kinsler, Trout, Upton. Well, actually, one of the guys is sitting in here. Let me get the last one.
I mean, Anderson Simmons batted 2nd a bunch last year. He could certainly do that again. I know he's not.
Simmons has been slotting in 5, 6, 7 in a lot of these. Calhoun's looking like the cleanup hitter in a fair amount, sometimes 5.
Does it matter, though? Like, I've been saying a bunch that what Cozart did last season looked kind of legit to me. I mean, there was BABIP. Actually, there wasn't BABIP issues. This wasn't about BABIP. This was a guy who, obviously, staying healthy is a problem. But if you have a shortstop eligible at third base, which he will be in, you know, 10 games into the season, who could hit 25 home runs, isn't that pretty good? I always thought he was being undervalued.
Mm-hmm. It's, well, a couple things. One is the injury history with him. That's, he has missed time with injuries, which I don't think could be completely discarded. The BABIP question is only relevant because his was higher than his own personal mark as opposed to the league average. 312 as his number last year was his career high. His career mark is 280. So that was a little high. And most of it came in the first half. So I think if you're just correct for the batting average, I'm on board with Cozart. But is 270 and 15, 270 and 20 a special player?
He had 24 home runs in 122 games. Why can't he hit 25 to 30 home runs?
You've got to take the park downgrade a little bit.
He hit 12 homers at home and 12 on the road. I mean, everybody keeps telling me that Zach Cozart can't do this again. And I keep thinking to myself, why can't he do this again? Like, I'm looking at all his numbers here. There's obviously a couple things that are disconcerting. The history is one of them, okay? I'm not staying healthy. Never was an on-base guy before this year, leaving a good ballpark, but that wasn't the issue last year. I mean, his OPS was 900 on the road, hit the ball hard. BABIP was not an issue. He smoked lefties. Oh, 312 was not that high. The league average is 299.
It's 32 points above his own average. The style of player that he is not that kind. By the way, the other thing is he's never batted higher than 258 other than last year.
Yeah, but he also never had a walk rate above 7. Last year was 12. Why can't we just say this is a different player? He changed his approach. He did something different. And he did. Everything was different about Zach Cozart last year,
but
except
what,
the health.
What? Like, what did he do different?
His walk rate went from 7 player. To 12.
Right, and that's one thing that did
help
him.
His launch angle changed, and his isolated power exploded. I mean,
did his launch
changed.
Angle change?
Yeah.
I don't think it did. He had the same fly ball rate he had the previous 3 years.
All right. I don't understand.
I mean, I could be wrong. The launch angle things are. I mean, unless I call up the database right now and we look into it, it'll take me 2 minutes. I mean, it's possible it went up, but the fly
all the
ball
normal
rate
things that people say here on why Zach Cozart had a career year just don't matter to me because the BABIP, yes, higher than his normal rate, but since he walked a lot more, had a different approach and a different swing, I don't think any of that matters. The thing that concerns me is that he gets hurt again and he bats 7th. I don't think he's going to bat 2nd. But I do think he's underrated, and to answer the question, he's probably higher in my rankings than he is in everybody else's. Shortstop and then third base eligibility, which is nice. I think he's a 25 homer 270 guy, which I would take any day. Like, basically, He could end up being just an Evan Longoria with shortstop eligibility. And Longoria is still going to go in, what, round 12 or 13?
You know, that's a darn good point.
Well, I'm trying to make good points here. I mean,
no, but this is, but we need to, this is one of the other things I've been writing about is that we need to address the possibility that the player does hit his high end projection. If a reasonably high end projection for him is he stays healthy, gives you, let's say, 135, 140 games, goes 270 and 25, there's no reason to argue against that. That's correcting for batting average as much as I think you should for him.
That's what I'm doing. I think he can hit 270 with 25 home runs, which would make him a top 150 player. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah,
all right,
that's fair.
What's next, Kyle?
How many shortstops do you think went 275 with 25 homers last year?
Based on the fact that you're asking the question, I'm going to say probably three.
Cozart would make three if he did it this year. Two did it last year with Didi and Lindor. So, I mean, that would put you in pretty good company.
I honestly don't think he's that much different than Didi. I really don't. And Didi, I think you downgraded Tristan, right? You don't think he's going to do that again.
I actually think Didi's overrated. I love the guy as a player, and I think he's great for the Yankees, and I think he brings much better defense than people give him credit. But he had a lot of things go right last season, and I think the best-case scenario is he just repeats it. Why would you pay the full value?
I agree, but Zach Gozart's going around 24. I think that's an excellent value. I've got him in a bunch of leagues. All right.
And the only difference between the two of them is Didi's health history is a little better. That's it.
Yeah, but I'd rather have a guy put up all those numbers in 4 months than six. Then I can replace him and get somebody else to do it.
That's fair. Yep. That's a perfectly fair strategy.
All right.
Loving this. All right. Dave wants to know, we've talked about the humidor and its impact on Goldie, but he's wondering if it can put Patrick Corbin or Taijuan Walker on the radar as a top 40 overall pitcher.
Well, that seems a little aggressive. I don't know. I mean, I got to admit, I haven't invested in Patrick Corbin at all. One, I have a thing against lefties, even though I am a lefty. The strikeout rate last year was exceptional. That's a good strikeout rate. And he made 32 starts. Very good. Whip is high. He's a walker. He's going to get hit. He's going to give up a lot of hits, Patrick Corbin. Now, the humidor is going to change that some. But if you look at his home road splits last year, and again, it's 1 year. I don't want to put too much into it. He got blasted on the road. He gave up 19 of his 26 home runs away from Arizona last year. So he already was pitching better at home. Is he going to pitch like an ace now at home? I don't know. I don't view Patrick Corbin. I mean, he's an extreme ground baller anyway who gave up a lot of home runs. So 50 home runs in 2 years. I'm not really on board.
The first thing that I would advise is to go back and read, and it's in my ballparks column, links to Todd Zola's work and Derek Carty's work about that stadium. Once you have read it, make your own call on what you really think the Chase Field is going to turn into with the humidor, because there's a varying opinion on this, and I think it could vary over a couple of years here before it kind of stabilizes. But I think it's good news for Corbin, because if we remember that big year, and I think it was 14, I forget exactly which one, it might have been 14 or 15, the numbers he put up last year were not a far cry 13. From those stats.
It was 13. He missed 14. Yeah. I mean, 2013, he was good. He kept the home run rate down. Strikeout rate was fine. Whip was fine. Maybe he was a little lucky based in retrospect, because he's given up a lot more hits than innings in each of his past two seasons. I mean, I would rather invest in Walker, who I feel like has more upside. I feel like we've seen the best of Patrick Corbin, but we haven't seen the best of Walker because he's kind of like just hasn't had that one big season where he's made 31 starts. There's strikeout potential there. You have to like Walker, don't you, over Corbin?
I do, but I also think that most people also do, and they probably do enough to make Corbin the better bargain. By the way, the other thing here, having come off a points league draft yesterday, is Corbin was very underrated in the points leagues. These two guys are players that I think you can get at deep discounts in points leagues, and both of them qualify for that. Definitely they're two that I'd consider soft spots.
Have you seen a lot of correction for the humidor in the drafts and auctions you've done so far?
I have in Tout Wars there was a little bit of one, yes, and I did see one in that points league I just mentioned. It depends. It's on a case-to-case basis, and I would suggest that if you want to get a read on how it's going to go, throw out Paul Goldschmidt and throw out Jake Lamb first in your auction. See what they go for. If people are paying a premium for those two, the pitchers are going to come out as cheaper bargains.
I don't want Jake Lamb. But,
I don't either.
You know, I'm not investing there.
If he goes for a premium price, though, if people are paying for last year's numbers, they don't believe the humidor does anything.
All right. Hey, well, I guess we'll see what happens. What's next?
Seth is in a head-to-head league that penalizes batters for strikeouts. He wants to know how far that drags down the value of a guy like Stanton or Judge, and what players actually benefit from this format.
Well, obviously the people that don't strike out. they benefit.
Hashtag analysis.
That's what I hit for. Well, I mean, there are certain hitters who just don't strike out as much as others. I mean, Joey Votto is a top 10 pick in that league, right? I mean, he struck out like 80 times last year. Freddie Freeman and Joey Votto, you can make a case, are top 10 guys in that league.
Yes, yes. Votto gets a bump in anything that's going to reward for the walks. The other three that come to mind are Justin Turner gets a big bump. Jose Ramirez gets one. Mookie Betts.
Rendon doesn't strike out a lot. Daniel Murphy doesn't strike out a lot. I mean, in comparison to other people. Rizzo.
Yes.
Would you take Altuve over Trout there?
No.
I
still think there's enough separation between the two.
I don't think there
is. That's a preference thing. Well, in a point,
let me ask you, how many years of Altuve beating Trout is it going to take for you to rank Altuve first? Seven?
Is this
eight?
A point?
Any league. Even a standard.
I get it. I just, again, it's personal preference between the two. Trout's numbers last year showed peak form, that there could actually be growth. If he stays healthy and you forgive him for that fluky injury last year,
you're right.
He absolutely could put up better
Trout's upside is higher than Altuve's at this point. Okay. Trout could be a 40 homer, 30 steal guy. Altuve just can't do that. But it's four consecutive years where Altuve has beaten Trout in a standard league. Has it been the same in the points league? I think it has, right?
In a points league, it's Trout.
And points league, why is it?
He gives you more points on a points per game basis. If you're going walks.
More power, more walks. That's why.
More power, more extra base ability of the two of them does drive his scoring.
I think it's close at the least. But how far? Let's answer his question. How far? Judge struck out 200 times last year. Stanton, you know, came close to that. Are they even second round picks in that format?
I
would take Jose Ramirez over both of them in that format.
Yeah, I think Ramirez does get a little bit of a bump. I think Stanton stays in the second round. Judge, I've not been trying to get Judge in the points leagues because most of them do penalize for strikeouts.
Judge batted .284 last year. What do you think he hits this year?
.260, maybe .255.
And Stanton played 159 games, I believe, off the top of my head. How many games does he play? 139.
I think he plays fewer than that.
Fewer than 139? Then he's ranked wrong. He's clearly ranked wrong if he ends up with playing fewer than 140 games, which I think is totally possible.
I got him for 60 homers if he plays even 145, 150 games.
People have very short memories when it comes to fantasy baseball. Man, I mean,
they have really short memories for injuries.
I don't get it. I mean, a year ago this time, nobody wanted Stanton. Nobody, because of the injuries. And now everybody's like, oh, he's fine now. No, he's not. He didn't just get healthy suddenly. He just had a healthy year. Now do it again, and then I'll buy.
What they assume is that he's DHing and Judge's in right field. And by the way, that's a mistake because he suffered a lot of his injuries not in the field, as a hitter, or on the base paths.
What's next? I dig this music, man. I dig it.
A happy Carabao.
I'm warming on it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a good deal.
I'm happy no matter what. Okay, even if I don't like the music. I mean, well, I do my job.
Is everything awesome? Is that official today, then? Can you mean it when you say it?
Excuse me? Are you implying that I don't mean it on other shows?
I'm saying you mean it more today. On a day like this?
I think you should just ask the question.
Man, oh, man.
Now you've upset me.
I'm staying out of this.
Stanton averaging 118 games per season entering last year. So.
Look, a year ago, I compared him to Tulowitzki. Obviously, that looks ridiculous now. But if Stanton comes up with a hamstring issue next week, I'm just saying, like...
Hey, Kyle, say that number again.
A shade over 118 entering last season.
Yeah. Say
that number again.
A shade over 118 entering last season.
I just want people to remember that.
Nobody remembers that. No, nobody remembers that at all until it happens again and they say, oh, I knew that was going to happen even though I took Stanton eighth in the draft or something like that. I don't have any shares. I hope he hits 60 home runs. I don't want anyone to get hurt or suspended or anything.
He's going to be great in the games he gives you, isn't he? But
be careful. Nobody's being careful with him. All right, what's next?
All right, last question's from Scott. He's got a question about an OBP league. He needs some help at catcher and shortstop. He's already drafted, so he's looking for some deeper options that might be there on the wire that you'd be willing to speculate on.
Catcher and shortstop. Got a bunch of catchers for you that I would wait until the very end or after for, like Robin Chirinos. Did we have the Chirinos-Posey conversation the other day where the only difference is maybe 50 points of batting average? Yet one guy's going
reliability too.
Oh yeah, Well, you're reliable until you're not. And by the way, being reliable and hitting 12 home runs doesn't matter to me. Okay? I mean, at some point, like, look at the numbers and not just at the Hall of Fame resume. I mean, Jorge Alfaro, I think, is hitting 20 home runs. And the plate discipline is abhorrent. But could he hit 270?
Love that word.
Well, could he hit 270 with 20 home runs? Yes. I could see Jorge Alfaro doing
that. Alfaro? I'd be shocked.
You'd be shocked.
270.
You'd be shocked if he had 270?
Yes.
He hits the ball hard.
I think he's going to bat 220, but I'm with you on the homers. 220? And he might bat below 220. He's got awful
Our projection is bad on him. We have him projected 8 home runs. He's going to play so much, he can't help but have more than 8 home runs and 37 RBI. 241 batting average? Yeah. I mean, that sounds about right. I'm just saying, don't dismiss 270. We see guys all the time out hit their plate discipline. If they have
it's
a good contact
hard
rate,
for him.
It is going to be hard. But he's in the right ballpark. Who else? I mean, Chris Iannetta because of Coors Field, obviously.
Love
the
him
two Atlanta guys. Nobody's drafting the two Atlanta guys, but look what they did last year. Is the combined? I think they had the second most home runs of any catchers. Like Atlanta's catchers last year hit a ton of home runs last year. Why can't Tyler Flowers and Kurt Suzuki do that again? They can. Everybody's so dismissive of surprises from last season, where they pick and choose.
Suzuki. You're right about the on-base percentage thing. 351 on base last year and 309 PAs.
He was a different hitter than he was in the past, just like Cozart. But nobody wants to believe that because they have in their mind what he is. Do you have a catcher or two? I'll look
Flowers,
at
yeah. Flowers is 378. The two that I really like, and we're talking more of the standard leagues than ones who are starting 24-plus, Alex Avila in addition to Chris Iannetta. I think the two of them have much, much more appeal in the on-base percentage leagues. We should get shortstop, too.
At shortstop, I mean, if I find that Ketel Marte is starting for Arizona, I'm a fan. I'll just say that right away. I think double-double homers and steals. Polanco was going to be on that list, but he did something bad, in theory. Cozart, definitely on that list. Addison Russell, you know, remember when we had the argument 2 seasons ago about Addison Russell, and now he's not even going in the top 200. Who else is not being... Chad Pinder is becoming interesting to me. Because, and again, we always say, oh, the next Zobrist. Well, how about do more than that? I mean, Chad Pinder can play, I think, every position for Oakland, obviously, except catcher. That's a 20-home-run guy who could have a lot of eligibility. I don't think he's going to hit for a real high average, but he intrigues me a bit, Chad Pinder.
And he should. I'm with you because he is a launch angle guy, and he's one of the few that people are very infrequently talking about him. Definitely fits in that mold. Marte, as you said, Eric, great for on-base percentage. Great for on-base percentage. The other, who was the one I had?
What is Matt Duffy?
Dansby Swanson.
Swanson? Yes. I do think Swanson, again, everybody's dismissing him because he had a bad year. He was 22. What did we think going into last year about Swanson? Now, I believe he was on my Do Not Draft list last year, too, but that's because he was just getting taken way too high. But I projected like 290.
NLs.
290 with double
Benintendi.
Exactly. And Benintendi did great and is going to be great. Why can't Swanson still hit 280, 290 with double digits and home runs and steals? I don't know why he can't do that. We thought he was going to do that a year ago, and now we're just giving up on him. That's ridiculous. I think Swanson is absolutely a guy I would take late. More in a points league, I think, because he'll walk. Matt Duffy in 2015, 12 homers, 77 ribs, 12 steals, batted 295. He's the starting third baseman for Tampa Bay, right?
Yeah,
and he's
Leo,
healthy.
Leo, where is he? What's he? Is he going to start?
As far as I know, I mean, Christian Arroyo would be really the only competition.
I think Arroyo's already headed to the minors.
Right, exactly.
Optimism from the resident Rays fan.
Exactly.
But you know what's interesting about Duffy is that he is. Did you see how he got his shortstop eligibility, Tristan? I hadn't seen us do this before. So he played. There's Matt Duffy calling. He's going to tell us why he's shortstop eligible. Matt Duffy is shortstop eligible because...
I remember how he got it. Yeah, go ahead. Go.
3 minor league games last year.
Yeah.
And he played short in those games. It seems odd that we would give him a short eligibility based on that.
Because a lot of places in the industry are doing it based on that. The traditional rule in rotisserie is that if they don't have a major league eligibility, you go to the most played position at any professional level he played. There was a big battle about this. It was either in labor or tout wars, in fact.
So is Duffy on hold? I don't want to keep you from your conversation. Ask him.
Okay, hold on. Hey, Matt.
Ask
what
him
position
if he's
do you qualify at?
Huh? We already know where he qualifies.
Oh, you're going to play 145 games a third?
Really?
All right. Awesome.
Ask him about the isolated. I want to know about the... And how many is he going to be more disciplined? He's going to take more walks.
Oh, hold on. I got to get him back.
Get him back on the phone. Text him. You and him are pals. All right.
Isolated power.
This has gone
okay.
too far.
He said, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
That's what he said?
He's a realistic player.
I'm glad you just laughed, because today, according to Kyle, and Kyle's never wrong, is National Let's Laugh Day. How about that?
That's my kind of day.
It's also National Poultry Day, so pick up a chicken and laugh at it. Tomorrow's the first day of spring. We're getting a nor'easter, though, or a nor'easter, sorry. So good luck with your power and snow, boys.
Oh, man.
It's National Ravioli
Day. Is it really
day.
Spring? Isn't tomorrow the first day of spring?
I think I just said that.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
It's tradition if I don't hear you.
It's very strange. You just didn't hear what I said literally 10 seconds ago. I'm going to make ravioli with my fire in the fireplace since I won a power.
While you're laughing at the chicken you're holding?
Exactly. See, it all comes together.
There you go. Makes sense now.
You're back on the good list. Leo, there's the second chance bracket thing. Please tell us what that is and why people should do it.
They should do it because their bracket is probably in the garbage right now. But yeah, starting with the Sweet 16, you can start again, and there's more prizes and fun stuff to do, and you can make groups and compete against your friends. So if you had UVA and Michigan State in your final, you can try again, because obviously you're not feeling that anymore.
What a great weekend
of
college
basketball. I don't know anyone
basketball.
Who did that.
That was a fun. Yeah, somebody on this show had Virginia.
Nobody did that.
Is that you?
No.
Is that you, genius, who had Virginia winning?
I don't remember anybody who would have done that.
But Villanova's still alive.
I was going to say, all of our other picks are still in there. So.
All right, so do the second chance bracket and win great prizes.
And sign up for fantasy baseball.
And then our next and sign up for fantasy baseball. Do that too. Lots of content coming this week on the fantasy baseball pages, another mock draft, I believe, and another show. The Fantasy Focus Baseball will be back on Thursday, so please listen to this one and then listen to that one and then all the ones next week and the weeks beyond. Season starts in 10 days. Don't wait. That is all for today's show. I want to thank the crew, as always, Kyle Soppe, a good friend to all, editorial watchdog Leo Howe, who loves Matt Duffy and probably has his phone number as well, and producer Anthony Calatayud. For Tristan, I'm Eric. Have an awesome day.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
So weird.
I know.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.